Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
This country is big, boisterous, brawling, intemperate, restless, striving, daring, beautiful, bountiful, brave, good, and magnificent country needs us to help it thrive. That responsibility is more important than any of our personal interests or political affiliation. We are the servants of a great nation, a nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
If somebody was taken out of my team all of a sudden because of some stupid tweet, I would be really ticked off. Call your senators, call your members of Congress, and demand that we protect our 15,000 veterans and current military personnel.
It seems to me that if someone comes to the military with the notion of saying, I want to serve my country and want to protect this, the last great hope of mankind on earth, then at least they probably should figure out, and I say this without malice, figure out whether you're a man or a woman first, and then come to the military and serve this country.
And here with us to discuss the Senate's healthcare stops and starts, especially John McCain's impact, as well as President Trump's tweets about transgender people serving the military, are Elvia Diaz, editorial columnist for the Arizona Republic and AZ Central, and an editor for Lavos, and Chuck Coughlin, president of High Ground Public Affairs. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Elvia, have you written a couple of columns recently? I want to get your take on what Senator McCain did, because you, as you mentioned in your column this morning, were one of those people that were not all that happy with Senator McCain a couple of days ago, and then after his vote last night, you feel better about things. Overall, assess his impact of what's been happening over the past week or so.
Well, it's been a tremendous impact, and I think all of us agree that in the past week or so, he has been an incredible force in the U.S. Senate. I mean, he was diagnosed with cancer and got out of bed and flew to Washington and made a wonderful speech that obviously we're going to be talking about it here. And essentially, his power here is reviving the health care bill. So, you know, the column that you mentioned this morning that I feel better about it, I had written a previous column about saying, yes, it's a wonderful speech, and we like the senator, but he still is the one responsible for reviving this health care bill, and this is why we are talking about it. And obviously, we know what happened last night.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
Is Congress and is politics maybe more generally becoming more of a what have you done for me lately kind of occupation? I mean, Elvia, you mentioned that you weren't so thrilled with Senator McCain when he voted on the motion to proceed to go to voting on health care bills. But now you and a lot of other people are pretty happy with him for the way he voted on some of those bills. I mean, this is just within the span of a couple of days now. He's gone from villain to hero, and who knows what'll happen, you know, next week. I mean, are we looking at maybe vote by vote as opposed to the larger body of work?
It certainly feels that way, and I think this has been the case this whole year with Donald Trump. You know, clearly he has injected that kind of dialogue and that kind of discussion. So, yes, absolutely. You know, and in my column this morning, you know, I was saying, was I right to criticize him? Was I too soon criticizing him? And my point, you know, this morning is that in this democracy, a representative democracy, we as constituents, as residents, we have every right to criticize our elected officials every step of the way. But you're absolutely correct. So now John McCain is a hero among liberals, but, you know, conservatives are not very happy with him.
Well, and Chuck, we see it with other members of the Senate, too. Jeff Flake is one, Dean Heller of Nevada, another, who's sort of gone from hero to villain in a very short amount of time. Is this a good thing for the way we view politics?
Well, I don't know how we view politics anymore, other than in the tweet universe. And I think the essence of what John's comments were and the reason of his positioning was, you know, he's a member of, quote unquote, the greatest deliberative body in the world that, as he said himself, has not been a deliberative body for the last decade. The original health care bill was pushed through with an end in mind, without a deliberative process. It was a partisan vote on one side. And as McCain said, as the senator said in his speech last night, you know, that to doing that again is just replicating the same problem again. It's not what the Senate is supposed to be there for. And we've lost both at the congressional level, at the Senate level, and mostly every state house in the country. I've been doing this for 20 years. I remember deliberative processes. You know, we did that out here on Medicaid restoration when Governor Brewer pushed through the Medicaid restoration. That was a very deliberative process. There was amendments being offered on the floor. There was big debates, and people had to maintain demeanor. We don't do that anymore. And I think it's and the senator, you know, in the humbled state that he is right now, he has become the conscience of the Senate again. And so that's a good thing. And I'm hopeful that this will be a moment to move forward and create a much more deliberative, thoughtful, bipartisan process that is not so reactive to, particularly in the Senate, to the tweet of the day or the tweet of the day or the Facebook post of the day or the latest column.
And that will be part of his legacy. What happens in the next few days and what happens in the next few months? You know, that's the process, the bipartisanship. We'll see if it actually happens or if we're going to go back to, well, you are a Republican, you want this. You are a Democrat, therefore we're not going to invite you to the table. So only time will tell. Right now, it doesn't seem like it, but let's hope it will.
It takes time. I mean, it will take time. In the lead-in clip you guys used, you said, we're a great country. You said, we're more than the members of the parties that we represent. We're not. It's our political affiliation doesn't define us. That's the leaping-off point that I hope and believe that the process. I think there's four or five other Republicans that voted yes yesterday or last night that will join him in that effort. So I think McConnell will have to deal with that.
Now, Chuck, we're not going to talk about the overall legacy of John McCain yet because we don't know how much longer he's going to be in office, maybe quite a while. But where does this fall on the so-called maverick scale? Because we always seem to measure McCain based on, okay, does he say things and follow up? Does he say things and not follow up? Whatnot?
Look, we're in the blush of the moment here, right? I was texting friends last night. I was texting friends this morning. I sent him a note this morning. I've never been more proud of him. I've known him for 34 years now. I've never been more proud of him in all of my career and all of my relationships with him for that moment in time. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes from here.
Elvia, from the journalistic standpoint, where do you think this puts him on the John McCain maverick scale, from especially over the last, let's say, 17 years since he first ran for president?
Well, just people like Chuck, incredibly proud. Arizonans are proud. Millions of folks who will have health insurance, at least for the foreseeable future, are really proud of him. So, yes, they view him as the savior of health care for those folks. So they are talking about the John McCain that we loved in the past and the John McCain that we respected and the John McCain that we want in the future. So when you have someone like that that is not afraid or is not perceived to be afraid and is going to be doing the right thing no matter what, then you can talk. Then it's not about just politics. Then it's not about just disagreeing with him. Then you're talking about the substance. Then we can disagree on that and not on the Twitter and the politicking.
Yeah, I think that the proof will be in the pudding here, where we go from here. As I said, I believe and I pray that this will be a departure moment for the body, for that body, and that it will begin, as he said, it is a co-equal, you know, with the president. When they act together, they are. When they work as a body, they are. When they act in partisan manner, purely partisan manner, they weren't passing a reform bill last night. That wasn't a piece of legislation. And that's what people keep saying. I mean, well, you know, the Wall Street Journal saying, oh, we got, you know, Trump's had this massive impact because he's rolled back all this, all the Obama agenda in terms of the regulatory state. Well, that was all done under the auspices of the imperial presidency as well. That's not good for the economy. It's not good for the country. What's good is long-term predictive stable, thoughtful, deliberative discussions which create robust economic health.
And of course, you're talking as a reasonable, thoughtful person, and that's not what we have in the White House. So also keep in mind what this vote means for President Donald Trump, regardless of the substance of the bill that was put out to a vote last night. So it really sends a message to the country that, yes, the Senate may be the body that can stop Donald Trump.
Chuck, I want to ask you about something that you said just a few minutes ago, which is that you think that there are a number of senators who voted yes last night who will go along with Senator McCain to maybe try to find something else. I'm wondering if he is maybe one of the few members of the Senate who really has the gravitas anymore from having been there for so long, he ran for president, to really pull disparate members, maybe both Republican and Democrat, to some kind of solution. And also, if that poll maybe leads to the House, too, where they've also got to get something in agreement.
Well, if it happens in the Senate, the model will be predictive in the House. Ryan will have to work with the Democratic caucus because the Republican Freedom Caucus will walk on him. And in order to get a bill done, you'll have to do that. So I believe there's a path here to do that. It will not be easy. It will be very difficult. Elvia focuses, as a lot of people do, on the president. I look at the president as a product of our times. He is a product of the political machinery that we have today, the system that we have today, which is a highly, 95% of these people get elected in primaries. And that's the only game they know. They don't even have to compete in a general election. And so they know in most of these states, if they win the Republican or Democratic primary, depending on whether you're a red or a blue state, you're done. And so then with the influence of dark money, the dark money comes in as a suppressive voice to any opposition. And so they use the dark money, which was created under the Citizens United Act, not to advocate for their positions, but to suppress opposition in a very narrow Republican or Democratic primary. Both sides do it. So it's destructive to the deliberative process, the political process. I mean, we got to get to the point. We got to get back, and maybe this will be a springboard to that discussion of fixing the institution itself, which I know our senator believes in. I've talked to him about that. He was McCain-Feingold. That had lots of imperfections in it too. Anything you do is going to have imperfections, but the idea is don't allow the perfect to be the enemy of good. You know, it's get good done because we're still, as John said, the greatest country in America.
That's Chuck Coughlin. Also here with us is Elvia Diaz. You're listening to the NewsCap on the Friday edition of the show on 91.5. Still more conversation to come, including about Senator Jeff Flake. What's his impact and why did he write a book? Plus transgender folks in the military. All that's still to come. Happy Friday. It's the show on 91.5. You're listening to our NewsCap segment in Phoenix along with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Also here, Chuck Coughlin and Elvia Diaz. Elvia, we spent a lot of our first segment talking about one of Arizona's senators. There's another senator who has said a lot of things, is a very even-tempered person, has criticized Donald Trump. Ultimately, he voted in favor of this so-called skinny repeal. What should we be looking at in terms of that, in terms of Senator Flake's future? Is it just about trying to keep the rightward flank away from him in a primary or what?
Well, he's certainly looking at next year, 2018, and he is desperately trying to save his seat. And I will say he is. And Chuck, you would probably agree with me. He is in serious risk right now. And one of the things that I have been thinking of is that we're focusing on John McCain with this vote, and rightly so, because he was the deciding vote. But our other senator did vote for this legislation, and he's not very popular. I personally like Jeff Flake. You know, he says the right things. He has the right charisma, great personality. I like our senator, but I don't like his votes. You know, I don't like that he's always voting for and with his Republicans, you know, talking about this bipartisanship. Well, he's always been loyal to the party or almost always. So, yes, he's absolutely looking up to himself.
Chuck, let me ask you one quick thing that will follow up on what Elvia says, which is that Senator Flake, we don't know, I guess, in a Republican primary, though he's an incumbent, has a lot of money. But do you think he is less at risk now because of, frankly, the things that one of his opponents, Kelly Ward, said last week about John McCain, which even unless you're the most arch-conservative people, you're feeling like, kind of, do I really want to support this person?
Yeah, as long as Kelly Ward's in the race, I think he's pretty safe because I think he could be vulnerable to a credible Republican candidate. She's not that. But if she stays in the race and, say, you have another opponent, if you had a Jeff DeWitt, for instance, or if you had, Robert Graham, the former chairman of the party, somebody like that, jump in. Incumbents win in those scenarios because you're dividing, the vote three ways, and the incumbent has his base. And let's talk about Jeff's base. Jeff is a conscience conservative. He is the definition of the Goldwater conservative. That's why he's writing a book, because he's got problems with where the party's at, particularly on trade with Mexico, particularly on border relations with Mexico. And so he's a free trader. I have differences. I've gotten in vehement disagreements with him when he was a congressman, when we were doing the Prop 400, the half-cent sales tax vote out here in Maricopa County to fund our Valley Freeway system. And he came out against that with Congressman Shattuck. And I said, this is our, go back and do your job. We're doing our job. And we got into it pretty hot, but we've exchanged, we continue to talk. And I think that's why he's coming out with a book, because he is having a problem with the way the party is now moving towards this demagoguery of which is sort of represented in the White House right now, the tweet of the moment. And so I think he's coming out with a book, which is pretty bold for a guy to do that in an election year.
That he apparently didn't tell his staff he was writing until very recently.
And we don't know. I mean, we haven't read the book, right? So we don't know what he's going to say. So we're guessing.
If I were running his camp, if I was Steve Voehler and his crew running his campaign, I would not have been happy about that. I mean, I knew Governor Brewer was writing a book, and I said, that's coming out after this is over with. We're doing that after this. This is not going to be because a campaign is about a narrative. You want to control the narrative of the campaign.
Well, maybe he'll try to control the narrative through this book. It's
his campaign.
Instead of a tweet, in that case, we should give it to him.
At the end of the day, the funniest line I ever heard when I was running the governor's campaign, it was the former governor of Louisiana, governor from Louisiana, head of the RNC, said, somebody asked, what's the difference between a campaign manager and a candidate? He said back, well, you're the horse. You're running the race. You got your head pretty close to the whatever you're running against. He goes, you got to have a jockey on your back that sees the field. If you don't like the jockey, get him off your back. Well, what Jeff is doing by writing the book is saying, I'm going to run the race this way. Figure out how to do that for me. And that's bold. I applaud him for doing that. He's going to lay out what his vision is, and I think he wants to narrate the campaign that way.
So the message here is that we all need to read it. And
we'll have you back in a couple of weeks to talk about it after we've had a chance to digest it, right? One of the other big stories of the week was President Trump in a tweet announcing that the U.S. would no longer allow transgender people to serve in the U.S. military. And that led, as you might imagine, to a lot of questions, many of them logistic. How does it work? Does this apply to people already in the military? And Senator McCain, we've talked about him. He came out saying, anybody who wants to serve, we should let them serve. What will be the practical impact? Let's forget the political stuff for a minute. The practical impact on the U.S. military, which is engaged in a number of places around the world, if there are people who want to serve, is there a compelling reason not to let them?
Well, let's remember that this is just a tweet, and clearly it's coming from the president and incredibly important. But as far as I know, and you tell me if I have missed any news, he hasn't signed any directives,
necessarily make direct policy through social media.
Yeah, it's right. He has to do something. So when you're talking about the impact, clearly they can still serve, until he actually comes up with a policy or tells his generals, this is what we're going to do. So
how
do you see it?
I felt I was in a time machine. It was like 1986 again, when they were talking about gays in the military, and Barry Goldwater was chairman of the Armed Services Committee, and Barry said, I don't care if you're straight. I just care if you shoot straight. We're back there again. It's the same. And Barry Goldwater was on the side of just what Avi was saying. I just want to be able to fight. And so Look, there's the policy level here, which will be addressed in the defense appropriations bill, which Senator McCain is managing. And I think we already heard where he's at on this, which is where Barry Goldwater was at on this. If you can shoot straight, we want you in the Army. You know,
it's amazing. I was reading the column yeah. that you were talking about, and it sounds as if it was yesterday.
It does. It's just so. And then let's talk about the politics of it. The politics of it is pretty simple. Donald, our president, is the master of distraction. So when he's pushing the bill through the House on the border wall and funding, you know, immigration and going today to a university in upstate New York where one of the Mexican gangs has created murders in northern New York, he's creating this massive distraction while a policy goes on. I continue to say, and I've talked to Elvia and everybody that will listen about this, we continue to ask the wrong questions here. This is not a domestic policy problem. This is a foreign policy problem. This is instability in Mexico and Central America. We continue to treat them like a verse out of a Jimmy Buffett song on a foreign policy basis, rather than looking at Mexico, looking at Central America and saying, why are all these people coming up here? Why aren't we creating, why aren't we encouraging them to create a legitimate middle class in Mexico that we grow economic opportunity rather than having to have all these people risk life, limb, family, and property to come to America? I mean, it to us, that's a trading partner. We should be embracing this opportunity to force political reform in Mexico. But we don't. Nobody talks about it like that.
I think you're right. He is very good at distracting. But in this case, I really think he meant it. And obviously, we don't know what he's thinking when he's tweeting and you know, making this irrational decisions. But I do believe, and Politico had this detailed story about how he really wanted the $1.6 billion for the wall. And this is a way of saying, yes, you know, you can have it. So he saw it as an immediate. The generals, you know, wanted to make sure that the Pentagon doesn't pay for some medical treatment. And instead of dealing with the issue, the president just said, well, we'll just get rid of all that.
But wasn't Mexico going to pay for the wall, though? That's what I'm confused about. Where's that?
Well, but again, I mean,
this past week,
11 or 8 people or 9 people died in a truck
in
a San Antonio parking lot. I mean, this is a humanitarian crisis. And I've traded jabs with Elvia on this point, that the Democrats continue to misplay this instead of playing the race card, which always gets played in a domestic policy situation. This should be a human rights issue. This should be an issue of how the country treats Mexico as a country. And what I mean, they had 11,500 murders in the first 5 months in Mexico that were related to the drug cartels. That's not that she and I have traded barbs about. I've called it a failed state.
It's not just about Mexico. It's about
it's
the supply and demand of the drugs here in the United States. So
yes.
We also have to have that discussion, and we're missing it.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we're not going to end on a fun note. I was really hoping we would. But anyway.
Hey, we can talk about the book, Jeff Flake's book, and we can end it there.
Read Jeff Flake's book. Creative title, as we said. It harkens back to something 50 years ago. Elvia Diaz is editorial columnist for the Arizona Republic and AZ Central, and an editor for La Voz. Chuck Coughlin, president of High Ground Public Affairs. Guys, thanks, and have a great weekend.
Thanks for having us in.
And
Thank
the show
you.
Continues. You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.